Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And we have a Back. You hear me, Tony?
I'm here.
All right. Well, let's try this again. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. And we got a couple little minutes bits here. I don't know if Tom's going to stumble on here or not in a minute. But I'm sure he's going to want to pipe in for some of this eventually. Let's see what we got here. Of course, we had you guys pick the right winner in the big boxing matchup at the beginning.
I picked the right winner. I did not foresee that that outcome. I did not foresee it being that one-sided. And if his post was accurate from the other day, I don't think Mr. Scully was very happy about the result either.
Really?
Yeah.
What did he post? I missed it.
He posted it either Sunday or Monday. I'm not used to doing the show on Tuesday. So either Sunday or Monday. And basically, he didn't mention any names or anything, but he basically said one of the most frustrating things is, you know, basically working on things and between rounds, I'm screaming about the things that had been worked on that were not being polished. And I think that was a pretty major point of his frustration. But you got to give it to Andre Ward. He looks good. Obviously, you can't, you know, tell how much Chad Dawson was weakened making the weight. He didn't indicate any problems going into the fight making the weight. But like I said, I know what it's like. And I know sometimes you get in there and you have nothing. That being said, it was Ward took advantage of it, and I mean he just was masterful. Three knockdowns forced Dawson basically to pull a no mas and really cement himself as one of the top pound for pound fighters in the world. Talking about a guy that has not lost a fight since he's 12 years old.
Nice. Can beat
that. Yeah.
Rocky Marciano's 49-0 someday. Anyway, we have Vitaly Klitschko notched another win over the weekend too against German Manuel Char, who was 21-1 with 11 KOs, and he was pretty much in control from the start. And he opened up a cut on Char in round two. Knocked him down at the end of the round, but didn't really have a chance to follow up. And Char's cut turned into a pretty bad cut by round four. German ring physician examined him. The fight was stopped at 2:04 of the fourth round. And supposedly this was going to be Klitschko's last fight. The only one I see squawking to try to fight him is David Haye.
Yeah. I actually was reading a post online today. And I probably just not remembering who exactly wrote it. I forget if it was KO Digest or one of the many boxing Facebook pages that I'm friends with. They basically came out there and said, you know what, hey, why don't you try to get a rematch with Vladimir and redeem yourself after that god-awful performance you put out there 14 months ago against him. Now, the actual funny thing is it was a couple fights this weekend. The only one I really got to see was the Chad Dawson Andre Ward fight, which was the big one. But we had a card with some Philadelphia flavor in it. Brian Bye Bye Jennings, who I covered a few months ago, he scored a 35-second knockout. We had Steve Cunningham making his first 4A at heavyweight. He won a unanimous decision. And let me pull up the other fight on that card, which was Thomas Adamak. while I'm pulling that up, probably the best fight of the weekend was a fight on
Thomas Adamek stopped Travis Walker, right? A fight in Newark, New Jersey. You there, Tony? Hello? What happened? Can you hear me now? The clock's still ticking. Let's try Tony again. Stop Travis Walker in that fight in New Jersey.
Hey.
Hey, there you are. You went into
I can hear you loud and clear. I was trying to respond. Yeah, they said Walker had a few moments in the first Adamak, but Adamak, you know, eventually, you know, stopped him in the fifth round. But they said the best fight of the weekend, which I only got to catch just a little bit of when I got home Saturday night, was a fight on Showtime. And boy, was it a barn burner.
Ortiz versus Olusegun. That one?
Which one would you say?
Matisse versus Olusegun, is that the one?
Yeah, that is the one. And, I mean, Matisse put on a hell of a performance with a 10th-round stoppage. But his opponent actually came out of that fight, won over a lot of fans. I know he won my father over. I only caught the very end of it. My father was like, Jesus Christ, this guy had never been knocked down until the 10th round. First time in his career, he said Matisse hit him with some bombs, and it looked like the guy was about to go down. And next thing you know, he would just shake his head and keep firing back. Hell of a fight. It's one of those fights that, you know, even though the one fighter did lose and he was behind on the cards and he got stopped, there were no losers in that fight. And what he said was his biggest problem his whole career was nobody wants to fight him. He's a fighter that just goes out there, and he's so tough, and he's so strong, and he hits hard. Nobody wants to fight him. And thanking the teacher for basically giving him the opportunity. And if you're watching the fight, especially from what my father said, I can see why nobody wants to fight the goddamn guy. He's like, I wouldn't want to fight him. I also heard a rumor this weekend of a potential return of Mr. Ricky Hatton.
Yes, I have been reading about that. I don't think it's a good idea, though.
You know what? Honestly, neither do I. Ricky was a fighter when he was younger. He just fought on pure aggression and pure stamina. He would just go in there and just wear guys down. That's how he beat Castro, and that's how he beat the fighters that, you know, Paulie Malignaggi and other guys where he defended his title. I knew he didn't really have a chance against Floyd Mayweather. And I actually predicted that one. I think I was only off by one round when I predicted the TKO. I think I picked it in 9. He stopped him in 10. And then the fight was Manny Pacquiao. When Hatton went to Floyd Sr. as his trainer, I said, this is not going to work. I said, because Ricky is just basically a war of attrition kind of guy that almost smothers you and just wears you down. And I said, and Floyd's not going to train him like that. He's going to try to train him like he would his own son, with the rat-a-tat-tat and the little tap-tap on the mitts and all that bullshit, which we know I love so much. And that's what he was doing. And basically, when he got into it, Manny Pacquiao, you could see he was caught between two styles. He wanted to be aggressive, but that's what he wasn't trained for. And basically, he stood right in the middle, and he got his ass knocked out cold. And I don't think he should come back. I have a lot of respect for Ricky Hatton, but I'm going to respect his decision and wish him well.
I want to welcome Psychic Tom Padgett. He's on the line, I guess, right, Tom?
You know, I'm just wondering if finance is playing a role in this comeback. You know, you got to hope not. For all the reasons to come back, my experience has shown, from what I've observed, that's the worst one, the absolute worst one. So, see how it goes.
I mean, he's got to keep the club. He's got to keep all those beer companies in business.
Well,
and that was the thing about Ricky Hatton. And like I said, as much as I liked Ricky, and I remember watching him when he first started his career, and I also remember Ring Magazine doing a profile on him. And Ricky was a guy that, okay, you have other fighters, like, you have your Bernard Hopkins type of fighter, that they live such a Spartan lifestyle and fight with such a, like, almost, and especially later in his career, defense at first, that he could last until 47 years old. You have other fighters, your Arturo Gatti's, that basically don't last as long because every fight seems to take something so much out of them. And Ricky Hatton kind of fell in that style. He was such an aggressive guy. He was such a face-first kind of guy, a war of attrition kind of guy, that even his wins, I remember his fight, he was actually a kid from New England, which I'm sure you can remember his name, Luis Collazo, I think it was. And he really, you know, he lost the decision, yes, but, I mean, he put a lot of lumps on Ricky's face and had him busted up pretty good. So Ricky was a fighter that, you know, wasn't ever in a bad fight, and that will wear you down early. Plus, he never lived the Spartan lifestyle. Ricky Hatton, for a guy that fought between 140 and 147, was usually up between 180, you know, between fights. You could see him with the double chins and everything, you know. He was a guy that, you know, didn't mind putting down a couple six-packs and eating some fish and chips and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, he's going to be coming back heavier, that's for sure. I don't think he's going to be 47. Either way, I think it's a bad idea. It's not a good time for him. He should try to find something else to do, but who knows, you know.
Got to keep your distributors in business.
Maybe he'll pull a Rocky Balboa. But anyway, we didn't even talk about the 44-second, DeMarco versus Molina fight there. It took him 44 seconds just to land the first devastating punch. And Molina crossed the ring. DeMarco moved in to finish him off, and Molina ended up sitting on the lowest rope where the referee moved in to stop the fight. And it was whether it was premature or not, Molina, I guess, should have taken a knee and given himself the chance to continue, but it's hard as he got hit, it's not likely he would have made it into a few more rounds. So, HBO's Larry Merchant asked DeMarco if he might consider fighting champion Adrian Broner next, and DeMarco said, if he wants, I'll fight him tomorrow. I mean, why not? He didn't really work that hard in the fight. That's kind of funny.
You know what, I remember, like, in all the years that I've been fighting, and even, like, a lot of sparring and everything, especially fighting, I was telling somebody about it today, because I've been trying to mix up what I do in the morning to the afternoon, and I've been doing a lot of walking again, and then I'm going to say, I want to get my legs back into it again, so I'm going to eventually get back into doing a little bit of jogging. So today, you know, I did mostly walking for about 2.5 miles, but I had some jogs in there, some sprints in there, and I always hated that. So when I fought, and Rich, you should be thankful you didn't have to fight me, because I would have blamed you for the fact that I had to run and I couldn't, you know, eat junk food. And it would have been your fault, and that's why I was mad every fight I went into, and I was, I'm going to whip somebody's ass.
I had to go running.
I'm like, I said, that was my fault every time I got in the ring. I'm whipping your ass because I had to go running because of you, and I had to give up junk food because of you. And now you're going to suffer for it.
Yeah. We would have killed each other, Tony. I was in such good shape back then from running 7 miles every Tuesday. Man.
With Gordy? And a cigar?
No, he didn't run with us on those runs. He would run maybe once a week with us on the 3 mile runs to return. We ran our 7 miles every Tuesday. We were on our own. The miles of Virginia there, the hills of Virginia. But I never really had to cut that much weight before my fights. If it was an emergency, I mean, I'd have to run a couple hours on the treadmill with my hoodie on, and that was it. I was lucky that way. But
Now, Rich, how many miles are you doing on Tuesday now?
It's today I did 2 miles on the splitter.
Oh, okay.
I'm lumberjacking. I haven't run in months. I got to start running again, even if it's down around the block. It's been a while.
Hey, Tom, what I used to hate about being in Lock Haven, which is central PA, we had an outside levee. Because back in, if you ever look up Lock Haven on the internet, you'll probably hear about the great flood of like 71 or whatever. So they built this levee up from the Susquehanna River. And for my freshman or so year, I would always run on the levee. I would not run inside. I couldn't run inside. I got to run on the levee. And Lock Haven winters could get funky sometimes. So I'm down about a mile and a half on the levee, because if you hit the first bridge with a mile, you hit the set of steps or whatever was a mile and a half, the second bridge was 2 miles, and you would jog back. So I was doing a 3 mile the one day. I was just about to hit the set of steps. I saw some snow. I said, oh, shit. I turned around, and there was a 10-minute snow squall that came out of nowhere, and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Now I'm on this path, which is no more really than 5 feet wide. I said, if this wind hits right, it's going to blow me. I'm going to fall down and roll into the Susquehanna and die. Or it's going to blow me the other way, and I'm going to fall down the hill, and I'm going to roll into traffic and die. I'm like, this sucks. So that's why I found an indoor track, and the rest of my tenure there, I only ran inside.
Yeah, that was kind of nice, because they had an armory building, and there was a track that actually went around the basketball court, but it was in the air. You'd look down on the basketball court and run
laps. That's what I ended up doing. And I ended up kind of liking it in there, because then I found out this one cute girl used to run in there. And just happened to be, the time she would be in there was the time I didn't have class, so I would always schedule my run around the same time hers was.
VMI had one of those, too, and I remember, like, the worst day of practice, we had to run sprints around that track, and then we had to do stairs after. So you better be kidding me, Gordon. Colonel Cox
used to have he used to do it one day a week, and if I remember correctly, I think it was Tuesdays he did, either Tuesdays or Thursdays, because Wednesday was a sparring day, and it was a drill called killer drill. So he did everything in 6 minute increments, would be the length of a column bout. So at the time, our locker room by where the boxing gym was, 15 laps around that locker room, like weaving all the lockers and everything, was approximately 1 mile. And then the doc would have you just run laps for 6 minutes. Then you'd pair up, and you had you run sprints. And then you'd get there, you'd have your hands taped and everything. And it was like, okay, half the group is skipping rope, half the group is shadowboxing, 6 straight minutes. Okay, now you're going to do this, you're going to do that. Well, we had this one kid on the team my junior year. The kid was a clown, refused to get in shape, and in the first sparring session got knocked on his ass, and thankfully he left. So, well, Doc would always make fun of him, and he actually, Doc's philosophy was right, because I still notice when people come over to train with me, okay, the kid on the normal circuit days, when you did any, you just did training at the pace you wanted to, say, okay, me, I'm going to start off skipping rope, then I'm going to chatterbox, then I'm going to go and I'm going to hit the heavy bag for, say, 5, 6, 7 rounds, then I'm going to grab a guy and we're going to alternate doing the mitt. That would be my usual circuit. Well, we had this one kid. On circuit training day, he would go up in the speed bag, and he would sit there like real slow, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And he would be up there for, like, 3 rounds, and we'd always be watching him. Because, hey, speed bag is fun for handle-eye coordination, and it's good in a gym because it has a good gym rhythm sound to it. But to be totally honest, it's not going to make you a world champ, and it's not going to help you cut weight or anything. It's just a little good little warm-up. But he would always do that. On the days it would be the killer drill, when we're all running laps, he'd be wrapping his hands. And then he'd get done, and he would have made the mistake, and he'd unwrap his whole hand, and re-wrap it real slow. And then, okay, time, everybody's done running. So what is this? And then Coach Lundy was like, I've been watching you for, like, the whole 2 months you've been here. You haven't broken a sweat yet. And he's like, no, I'm going to. And here was his reasoning why he was going to be good, even though he was 5'6" and 250 pounds. Because I'm left-handed. and people can't handle southpaws. I'm like, what did you watch, Rocky II with the southpaw dink? Come on, buddy. And then finally, first sparring session, another heavyweight who ended up not being very good either. Popped him on the head one time. He fell on his ass. He left the gym. And then a couple months later, he was in my dorm, and he's like, hey, you're getting ready for the Nationals, right? I said, yeah. I said, and he's, oh, who's in your weight class? And I'm like, well, you're not going to know anybody in my weight class. You haven't seen any of them. I said, well, we got this one kid. I said, I actually fought him in an exhibition from Army. He's a tall, lanky southpaw. I got a kid from Air Force. I got a kid from Kentucky. Oh, you're fighting a southpaw? Yeah. Well, you know I can't come to the gym to train with you, but if you just want to, you know, like, move around, like, we could, like, you know, shadow box up here and everything, and you could practice moving around the southpaw. I said, yeah, he's a tall, lanky southpaw with long arms. You're short and fat and you're slow. I don't think you're going to help me out that much.
Not good. Anyway, speaking of size difference, another fight we forgot to mention, heavyweight Deontay Wilder, who was a bronze medal winner in Beijing in 2008, made short work of Damon McCreary with a second-round TKO victory for his 25th win and 25th consecutive knockout. Just kind of interesting coming off our interview with Michael Moore. And it was a horrible mismatch because it was against 6'7" Wilder and 5'11" McCreary. And next time, I guess Wilder needs to pick on someone his own size.
Now, have either one of you looked at Wilder's record? Has he fought anyone that stands out at all?
No, I have not seen it. No.
Mm-hmm. Where is he from?
I don't know. It doesn't say in this little piece here that I'm getting all my results from.
Okay.
Let me look and see what it says on our box there. And,
while we're waiting, though, we have a couple MMA bad boys to speak of here. I know we've covered this story before, but this is probably the worst of the worst story of any MMA fighter, ex-MMA fighter, or active. But this guy, Taylor Powell, was 21 years old, was dead on the couch when police arrived at the scene in the Northern California town of Requa. He had his tongue cut out and his chest carved open. His charred heart was in a wood-burning stove across the room. Jared Wyatt, 27, was naked and smeared with blood from head to toe. I killed him, officers, said he told them. Wyatt was scheduled to go on trial next week in Crescent City for the March 2010 killing, but Thursday night pleaded guilty to first-degree murder involving mayhem and was sentenced to 50 years to life in prison.
I hope he gets at least life, if not death penalty.
Now, here's the twist. I mean, obviously, nobody in their right mind would do something like this. And while it might sound like a bath salt thing, it was actually hallucinogenic mushrooms. The two were actually friends and mixed martial arts fighters, and they had eaten hallucinogenic mushrooms before the attack. And unfortunately, the autopsy showed that the victim was butchered while he was still alive. Wyatt had pleaded guilty by reason of insanity, but psychiatric tests deemed him fit for trial. His lawyer, James Fallman, told the Times Standard that Wyatt decided this week that he did not want to testify, risk the possibility of a life sentence, or subject the victim's mother to the ordeal of a trial. Under the plea deal, he will be eligible for parole in 2062.
Ooh.
Look there, but it's a rough one. That's pretty crazy. I mean, you talk about hallucinations.
Well, I can go back to the 60s and 70s, and I know a lot of people that did a lot of mushrooms, and I can't imagine anything like this. It's just beyond the pale.
Yeah, it'd be pretty crazy. And this one story I read, supposedly there was a girlfriend there at one point, and there was no explanation of, like, what happened to the girl. Like, was she there for this whole thing or not? I would think, like, somebody would react if they weren't as screwed up as the other two. But, yeah, crazy. Anyway, another murder here. Mixed martial arts murderers here going up this week. This is an 11-month investigation undertaken by the Galveston Police Department and led to the arrest this week of the popular MMA fighter Ralph Plexan Texan Garcia Jr. And Lieutenant Michael Gray of the Galveston PD said that Ralph Garcia Jr. was arrested without incident on one charge of murder this Wednesday. Garcia was actually arrested while training at the Combat Sports Institute in Galveston, Texas. And he's charged with the fatal shooting of Maxie Flowers, who was 28 years old, on October 13th, 2011. Flowers was riding his motorcycle at the time of the shooting. And he was shot after the two men had inadvertently crossed paths and Garcia was insulted during a verbal exchange. Police Chief Henry Pareto says investigators do not believe Garcia knew Maxie Flowers, who was 27 years old. And the investigation into the murder is still ongoing, but police state that additional charges could be forthcoming. And Garcia's held on $500,000 bond. So, it's just two MMA murder stories for you. Sorry to smear the sport a little. Bunch of murderers.
Yeah, you see the kind of people that are drawn to that? We need some laws passed. I'm writing my congressman. What an example.
Yeah. Dr. Tom's question a few moments ago. I pulled up Deontay Wilder's record, taking a look at some of the guys he fought. And it looks like earlier this year he fought a fighter by the name of Owen What the Heck Beck. Owen Beck was a French contender, originally from Jamaica, a couple years ago. So, I mean, I took a look at that. I know he fought Nikolai Valuev about 6 years ago for the WBA heavyweight title, losing by TKO. But it looks like Owen Beck is really falling off the wayside. He hasn't won a fight in over 3 years, and he is losing now of eight straight, seven of them by KO. The only decision was to a guy in his third debut. So he really can't take much off that victory. I'm looking at the fighter that he just beat, who was undefeated, by the name of Damon McCreary. Damon McCreary, like you said, was 5'11", was undefeated 14-0 with 10 knockouts coming in. But I didn't recognize any of the guys on there. Most of his fights were in Michigan. So you could be a situation where he was fighting guys that were kind of from that Midwestern loop, you know, where you don't always get the top quality matchup. Another fighter on there from February, a guy by the name of Marlon Hayes from Newark, New Jersey. And I remember seeing Marlon fight in Philadelphia a couple times back in the mid-90s. And that was when he was fighting at about 165 pounds. Now he's up to like 219, 220. And he's also the loser of six straight and nine out of ten. So, right now, Mr. Wilder is still fought at the lower end of the competition. And, you know, what can always be difficult here is when you do step up, if you fought such a weak caliber of opposition, and I'm going to say, Morrison.
Well, it
and
definitely
Morrison,
sounds like it's
yet. Broke in back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. Definitely sounds like it's time to take the training wheels off.
I mean, we've broken, beat a lot of guys quickly. I mean, some of the names that have fought this company. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when Tommy was fighting guys with Pinklin Thomas, well past his prime. James Quartillis, well past his prime, you know. And then when he stepped up and he fought a guy like Ray Mercer, and Mercer stood up to that early onslaught, he didn't have an answer. And 5 minutes later, he's bobbing and weaving on his stool.
Of course, here's something to think about, though. Maybe every fighter is different because you can't expect him to, you know, I remember when Jerry Cooney was coming up and there was some criticism. And who's his man? Jones and Rappaport. One of them said, "Hey, who do you expect him to learn against King Kong?" You know, but there is a fine line that you've got to make that transition eventually. I would think everyone's a bit different, but you say Wilder's record's 25-0, right? you said 25-0, so I'd have to say it's, if he was the Olympic guy in 2008, yeah, it's past
that. I'm taking all the things in the fight. You know, fourth round there. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't, he's only gone four rounds in two of the fights, and they were both PKAs in the fourth. Everything else has been three rounds or less with a lot of one-rounders in there.
Well, I guess it'll be time to find out where he's at. But if I'm in his brain trust, I'd say we've got to get these training wheels off and let's move it up.
He was a fighter at Philadelphia a few years ago. I don't know him personally, but he was going for a record. And I apologize for not remembering the name of the fighter's record that he broke. But it was to start off his career with consecutive first-round knockouts. And the record was 19. And it was, the record was 18, and he broke it at 19. His name was Tyrone Brunson. And, you know, well, right after that, Brunson went into a fight, and the guy got him into that second round, and it was like, oh, shit. And the next thing you know, like, he ends up getting beat. I think he's got two losses on his career now. And you're right, it was the training wheels were on too long. It was like first-round knockout, first-round knockout, first-round knockout. Even Mike Tyson, when he was, you know, still developing and he was knocking guys out, he still had guys that were taking him into that second, third, and fourth round early in his career.
Yeah, I think Tyson was brought up. It was just a masterful job. And then when D'Amato passed away, Jim Jacobs stepped right in. And it was, I think that's the way to do it.
Well, yeah. We have some MMA news to talk about, and unfortunately it's more injury news for the UFC. Jose Aldo, once again, is injured. He injured his foot. I don't see any exact details here, but I guess Dana White announced the news today via Twitter. So he's not going to compete on October 13th at UFC 153, and he's not going to fight Frankie Edgar there, and it's not clear whether Edgar is going to stay on that card. And actually, Aldo, 26 years old, has not competed since defending his title on January 14th by knocking out Chad Mendes at UFC 142. And he was supposed to come back at UFC 149 to face Eric Koch, but Aldo was injured and the match was postponed to UFC 153. Koch was then sidelined and forced to withdraw, at which point the UFC gave Edgar the slot and now in limbo again. So, there you have it. Another case of the injury bug biting the UFC.
Well, hopefully the whole card won't be canceled this time. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Right.
Hopefully the whole card won't be canceled this time.
Yeah.
You know, so let's keep our fingers crossed. Now, hopefully this isn't a trend starting.
Yeah, I think they can throw together some people there to fix that. It was kind of hasty, I think, to even give Edgar that shot just going down that weight class off that title shot. I just had two chances at the title at his natural walk around weight. And you're going to give him a title right away. Kind of makes you think the UFC doesn't have any depth. What are you going to do? We have a ton of MMA fights coming up this weekend. Of course, not a UFC till next weekend, 22nd. But we have stuff from all over the world here on SureDog. Legacy Fighting Championships 14 from Houston, Texas. Tomorrow night. No, Friday night. I keep thinking it's Thursday. We got Just Fight Challenger, GCF 15 from the Czech Republic on Friday. Ring of Combat 42 from Atlantic City, New Jersey. We got Megal Hayes versus Brown, PWP 5 from New South Wales, Australia on Friday. Gladiator Challenge Unchained from Lincoln, California on Friday. And two more on Friday. We have Botany of Punishment 12 from Ostrobothnia, Finland. And Fight to Win the Warriors from Denver, Colorado on Friday. Then we go to Saturday. We have a lot of fights going on Saturday. It's the SFC Tournament 2012 Part 4 from Turin, Germany. Live to Fight MMA from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Eternal MMA from Cleveland, Australia. At the Southport Sharks Club. Fighting Symphony, KSW 20 from Gdansk, Poland. Sinclair versus Winner from Wembley Arena over in London. That's put on by Bama. Bama number 10. Unstoppable UBC 21 from Columbus, Ohio. Lions Cage Fight Combat from Brazil, the Federal District. Let's see what else we got here. Streaming live on SureDog, we have Road FC 9 from South Korea. Also have Haidar Kapklaba Combat 11, also from Brazil, Saturday. 559 Fights in Chulair, California. 559 Fights 5. We got AFC 11 Takeover from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Also on Saturday. And a few more here on Saturday. We got Portugal versus USA. WC MMA 1 from Ledyard, Connecticut. And Foxwoods. We got Freedom Fight Series 6. Put on by TWC from Springfield, Illinois on Saturday. Red Canvas Submission 2 from San Jose, California. NMEF Annihilation 42 from Colorado Springs, Colorado. And, of course, we have our Japan Fight Cage Impact 2012 in Hamamatsu. Put on by DEEP. And we have also, this is on Sunday, by the way. Sunday, Gladiator 38 from South Korea. And we got a couple fights from Shinjuku Face Tokyo, Japan on Monday, the 17th. And nothing until next Friday, which we'll talk about next Thursday. So there's your MMA schedule. And I don't have the boxing schedule in front of me. But we might bring that up here. We're going to have more than a few more news items here in front of me. Here's a little interesting twist. Another MMA story. During a Thursday press conference, the World Series of Fighting Mixed Martial Arts promotion announced its arrival with its first event scheduled for November 3rd in Las Vegas. And it turns out their big deal with NBC Sports only covers one event. Even though they've been running around saying they signed a one-year deal with NBC Sports Network. And on Friday, an NBC spokesperson told MMA Fighting that the agreement between the parties solely covers the first event. We are currently scheduled to air this one-night World Series of Fighting on NBC Sports Network. The agreement is for one event, and we'll evaluate this after this November 3rd fight. And Ray Sifo is actually the World Series of Fighting's president. And he's the one that said the organization had a one-year deal and hoped to have 8 to 10 events shown during that time. And still, I guess, a premiere on the national cable television outlet must be considered a coup for a promoter on their first ever event. And this is the NBC Sports Network that used to be Versus. So it's a pretty interesting deal. And I think maybe that's why the UFC is having this fight with
Depth.
It doesn't seem like they have enough people out there to fill these fights when people get injured. Or just make exciting fights for some of their title holders. But their first show is going to be at Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino. Former UFC and WEC star Miguel Torres in his first match since leaving UFC. And in addition, we have Bobby Lashley, Gerald Harris, and Jay-Z Cavalcante will be at that event. And here's some more MMA stuff. We got Tito Ortiz and John Jones on a little back and forth going on. You heard about this one, Tom?
Yeah, pretty interesting. Yeah.
I didn't read the most recent one, but I guess Tito revealed in an interview with Enemy Weekly that he felt backstabbed by John Jones's recent interview, where the reigning champ stated he's not complaining about money, unlike the Huntington Beach Bad Boy. And Ortiz took that personally, I guess. He tweeted, "Johnny Bones, I'm disappointed in you. When no one else had your back, I did. The only reason you make the money you do is because I fought and spoke out. No other fighters would. The next time you are riding in your Bentley, remember who fought for the fighter. If not, you may be riding in a truck." So, that's kind of funny. Basically, Tito said, "I think he's a great guy. I hung out with him in Vegas, and I really took a liking to the kid because I think he's the next best great thing. Now, all of a sudden, I heard an interview from him saying, people need to stop comparing me to Tito Ortiz because I don't talk about him. And I took a very heartfelt, that was like a stab to my back. I stood up for you and no one else did, and I stood up for you and you turn your back or say something like that. You have to understand when you drive around in your Bentley, or I don't know if he even has it anymore since he wrecked it into a tree." It's actually a telephone pole, I think. "But when you're driving around in your Bentley, you have to understand I'm the person who put my life on the line and my career and my image and my name on the line to take everything I did to battle for the type of contracts that you have for the money you're making." So I guess everybody is piling on the insults toward John Jones lately. It's like,
I'm just wondering if we're headed for another Tiger Woods situation with Jones. It just seems like it's just nothing good going his way. But I'll tell you what, it's very hard to argue with Tito's logic, because I remember when he first came on the scene, UFC 13, back in May of 97, and that was a critical time because the UFC had just lost a lot of cable contracts. So they were pretty much reduced to satellite then. So you can only guess at what the purses were, and that's assuming you'd go through win the tournament. And I have nothing but respect for those guys that kept it going in those terrible years in the late 90s. It's hard to argue with them.
He was one of Dana's original guys, you know, so he's been there pretty much from day one. The Fertitta's taken over. And so he has been one of those people that has pioneered the negotiation process. And of course, you know, he probably did get a lot of good big deals because Dana White was his manager at one point. So I think there's no way he's off base saying what he said about Jones. But I don't know what Jones is talking about either. There's no clarity given as far as, you know, where he got the idea that Tito complains about money. I know he had his big public spat with Dana White, but I'm not sure if it was about money. I think it was just more about the two hating each other. For whatever reason, I don't know. I could be wrong, but that was my thought on that. Anyway, speaking of Tito Ortiz, he's teaming up with boxing and MMA promoter Royal Engelbrecht to launch MMA Fight Club. To launch the Fight Club MMA Rising Stars series at the Hangar at the OC Fair and Event Center in Costa Mesa, California. And the first 2 days will be October 6th and December 7th at the Hangar, which is actually the home of Engelbrecht's popular Fight Club OC series, which features hybrid boxing and MMA cards. And Tito's part in this feature California's best young amateur MMA fighters, and will serve as a developmental stage for future pros in an environment where they're evenly matched. And Ortiz said, "I've always wanted to develop talent and make a positive influence from the days of wanting to be a wrestling coach to coaching on The Ultimate Fighter. I know what it takes to help scout these kids and take them to the next level. So along with my partner, entertainment and sports attorney George Prajan, I have set up we have teamed up with Roy to build a developmental league to the pros. We want to give credibility to the amateur division and rank the fighters, kind of like the Golden Gloves have done for boxing. We are not looking to compete with the UFC. In fact, we couldn't even if we tried. the UFC is the major leagues. We want to be the equivalent of college football to the NFL. We are looking... We are looking to scout out the fighters that we feel can make it and prepare them for the major step to the next level. And Engelbrecht helped Oscar De La Hoya get Golden Boy promotion started, so he's definitely a good partner for Tito Ortiz. There's no one in Southern California mixed martial arts that I would rather partner with than Tito Ortiz, Engelbrecht said. Fight Club OC is already a successful MMA promotion in Southern California and one of the best small venues in the country, so with Tito's expertise in MMA training as well as his business acumen and marketing savvy, we should be able to take this show around the country to a new level of success. So, tickets for the inaugural event on October 6th are available at fightcluboc.com.
So now, what is the venue? They're going to have... you say boxing and MMA, is it on the same night, or is it going to be separate cards, did it say?
Well, it sounds like this is all amateur, but Engelbrecht is already doing other cards with MMA and boxing. That's what it's like. At this place called The Hangar in Costa Mesa.
Yeah.
At the OC Fair and Event Center. So Californians will get a new amateur MMA circuit connected to Tito Ortiz. Of course, the big discussion in MMA this month here has been super fights, super bout between Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre, even before GSP has his comeback fight against Carlos Condit at UFC 154 in November. They're trying to work out this next fight. Win or lose, Anderson Silva said he will fight GSP after that fight. So White said, I think we're pretty close. I mean, if George St. Pierre beats Condit, that could be the next fight. If the fight happens, White said it will be at a catch weight of 180 pounds and it will take place at the 80,000-seat Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, Texas. These guys want to fight each other now, White said. I think that if you're a fighter and you've dominated as long as Anderson has, and been as great as long as George has, you finally want to say, I want to test this guy. I think I can beat this guy. So, another piece.
And apparently Dana said in an interview that assuming Anderson wins that fight, there's a lot of serious talk about him fighting John Jones.
Moving up.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, now I know they're both saying they're buddies and all that, but you know how that can go. So,
yeah, I think people were talking about John Jones after Jones versus Silva, after like maybe three of John Jones' major fights, and it was like everybody wanted to see that right away. But then they kind of shifted back to the GSP versus Silva argument because I think there was an interview question after one of the UFCs a few months ago, I think, and they asked Anderson Silva, what about this John Jones thing? And are you interested? And he just was like, no. He didn't elaborate. No. That's all he said. So it's going to be tougher to make that fight, I think, than this GSP thing, because they've been talking about this long enough, and two of them want to do it, and it's kind of weird, because you'd think GSP would want to wait until he has actually one fight under his belt back from injury before he would even kind of hype that kind of fight. But it seems like the UFC is doing a lot of things wrong, and he might be catching up with it, might not, but there was actually a pretty decent Bleacher Report article I read the other day. It was like the five major issues facing the UFC today. And it kind of pointed out how the Fox deal kind of fell through. It hasn't given them good ratings. And the fighter pay issues kind of been front and center in a lot of ways. And that their failure to build stars is another one that was kind of interesting. That they haven't really... solidify the next generation here. Everybody might have heard of the Tito Ortiz's, the Chuck Liddell's, and the John Jones's, but if you're not a titleist, I mean, it seems like you're not a star in the UFC today because they don't market you enough. But, and what happens when all these guys start leaving, too, you know, retiring? Some of the older generation that everybody knows.
No, I didn't see that article, and it's saying that, that the ratings on Fox have not been what they were hoping, or were they as good as they were on Spike? Did it give a comparison, or were they expecting so much more on Fox? Is that the issue?
Well, they have been really, really low for the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last one was the lowest they've ever experienced. One of the last two. But it's not so much that they're losing money because Fox pays for the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Win or lose. You know, it's more important than for them to get a full gate on those shows. But it's just that, it's kind of a failed experiment in a lot of people's eyes because they thought, well, with Fox showing our stuff and advertising it on the NFL broadcast, we're going to shoot through the roof. And that didn't happen. So.
Yeah.
You know, the fastest growing sport in the world thing maybe doesn't apply anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't mean he's hurting. It just seems like there's just been a lot of negative things happening to them lately. It's just kind of mounting at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had the first cancellation of a card, and you still got these injuries that are killing these cards. It just seems like one thing after another. And that's all it's going to really take for one of these young upstart leagues to kick in. And, you know, you're coming into winter months here, football season, yeah, but it's also the last months of Spike TV broadcasting only UFC stuff. Next year, they're going to go all Bellator.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to see. And speaking of more bad news, for the UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championship heavyweight Christian Moorcraft has joined the not-so-prestigious list of mixed martial arts fighters to be popped for drinking and driving after the New England native was arrested over the weekend for refusing to take a breathalyzer. And the place I used to hang out a lot, Main Street in Hyannis, was where they stopped him. They arrested Christian Moorcraft, 25, of Hyannis, and charged him with operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of alcohol, driving so as to endanger, speeding, and driving with no license in possession. That's a new one. I didn't know you could get popped for not having your license on you. I know that when I lived in Massachusetts, I know I was stopped at least once without my license on me, and they didn't get me. Sounds like they're being nitpicky there. Anyway, Moorcraft got a 7-3 record. He was charged by his own admission with OUI after having a few beers. Quote, having a few beers was a bite to eat.
Normally it's two. Oh, I just had two. Yeah. Okay.
And here's his quote. He apologized via cage potato. That's funny. They're like the humor site. He says, a good man is an honest man. I made a mistake. After a long work week and a good week of training, I hit a speed bump. I beat myself. I had a few beers and grabbed a bite to eat. I got pulled over and asked to take a breathalyzer. I refused. So I was arrested and charged with an OUI. I apologize to the community, USC, Cape Cod Insulation, my family and friends. Cape Cod Insulation must be where he works. I'm guessing. Moorcraft has had back-to-back knockout losses to Matt Mitrione and Pat Barry. And he's in the club now with John Jones and Ross Pearson. The MMA fighters against drunk driving.
Let's see, that would be MMAADD.
Bones was bagged and tagged after wrapping his car around a utility pole. See, I was right, it wasn't a tree. Last May, and the real deal, Pearson got pinched just a few weeks earlier in Las Vegas for the same offense. And I don't know about Moorcraft's fighting future, but don't think the UFC is going to be calling anytime soon. Let that go blow over first. But,
well, let's hope we get a good card coming up. You know, I think one good card can turn a lot of this negativity around.
Yeah, let's hope Belfort is on his game on the 22nd. You know, that's going to be an interesting fight for Jones.
Yeah.
I got a feeling he might underestimate him, but it won't matter.
Yeah, I would agree.
Name a game to beat Jones. But, you know, it could be a Rocky Balboa thing. You never know. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
But here's an interesting card. I want to go switch gears here back to boxing. And we obviously, we don't have Friday Night Fights anymore, but this week on ESPN, we have a special edition from Las Vegas. We have ESPN2 covering Thursday Night Fights. And, actually, this is why we're doing this show today, because I'm going to be in Massachusetts for Thursday night. Thursday the 13th. Which is Tony's birthday, too. Good excuse to go out and have a drink.
Yes, well, I had a few last night, Bill. A friend of mine from the local band, he invited me out last night. I was meeting up with him and his assistant. I don't really know why, but I met them, and this is after I did all my training, and I thought they had the death. And I go out there, I'm like, get him to something there tonight. Yeah, and then I'm missing out on doing cherry bomb. Yeah.
Well, Thursday night, the 13th, I'm going to be organizing my buddy's bachelor party at a little car racing place in our old stomping grounds where they have pool and all kinds of other stuff. But anyway, there's going to be some stuff on TV there on ESPN, some fights, some boxing matches. We got Jesse Vargas, who's 19-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Aaron Martinez, who's 18-1-1. Pretty decent little main event, welterweight fight. And this is going to be from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino out there in Vegas. We also have an interesting co-main event there between light welterweights Luis Cruz, who's 20-1 with 16 knockouts, and Casey Ramos, who's undefeated at 16-0 with 5 knockouts. And also a couple other interesting fights here. We got Andy Ruiz Jr. at heavyweight, who's 15-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting Morin, who's 11-2-2. And we have Xavier Tolliver, 23-8 at light middleweight, fighting Mikhail Zuski, who's 15-0 with 11 knockouts. And if that is not enough undefeated fighters, we have lightweight Terrence Crawford, who's 17-0 with 13 knockouts, fighting Hardy Paredes, who's 15-10, 9 knockouts. So that's a pretty interesting card for Bob Arum there out in Las Vegas.
Tony, how many candles are on your cake this in 2 days?
Too many. How many are on the candles, or how many candles are on the cake? How many candles do I act, or how many candles do I feel? Well, I'll answer all three. Candles on the cake are 36.
Mm-hmm.
Candles I feel, some days feels like it's 22, some days feels like it's 72. Depends on how the weather is and how the knees and the shoulders are feeling. On how I act, I would say about 19.
Okay,
I'll say 21, because 19 is going to go to a bar. So I'll say 21.
Okay, that'll work.
And, you know, I can manage like budgets and all that stuff and manage bills and everything, but overall, like, when I was hanging out with my friend from the band the other night, or last night, when I first came in there, him and his assistant were there, it was the band that played last weekend, bachelor party weekend on the shore, and I've known them for 10 years. As soon as I walked in, they, in unison, announced last man standing. And then it dawned on me, that's what everybody anointed me last week, because I was the last man standing. I outlasted the groom. I outlasted the guy that doesn't even drink.
Hey, well, you know, Tony, you are born during the year of the dragon. Yeah, you're born during the year of the dragon, and according to Chinese astrology, that's where all this energy comes from. So,
whoa, psychic Tom kicking in.
That's it.
He's reading you, Tony. He's reading you.
That's it. Got his horoscope. We'll have it. We'll have the inside stuff next show. Tune in.
Still one of my favorites to always say. Obviously, you know, I grew up a diehard Eagles fan, always have been. I'm a Philadelphia guy.
Eagles won.
And, yes, they did. It was ugly, but they won, and I'll take it. And I said on my Facebook page, I will take an ugly win over a pretty loss any day of the week. Because at the end of the season, when you're trying to get to the playoffs, it doesn't matter how pretty the wins were, just if you had enough to get them there. But I was 2.5 weeks early. I was supposed to be born at the very end of September. I came out on the 13th. So everybody that knows me, the first thing they said, what was it, Friday the 13th? And it was bad luck for the world. And I said, no, you smartass. It was Monday the 13th. And I said, oh, Monday. What, was the Eagles on Monday Night Football? You didn't want to miss it? So I decided to do some research. This was back in like the early 2000s when we were talking about this. So I did some research, and I'm like, all right, let me see where I was in the actual day of my birth. April 12th, and you see the movie Invincible about Vince Papale, who was a school teacher that ended up trying out for the Eagles and making the roster. It's a true story. Well, his first professional game was that Sunday the 12th, when he lost to the hated Dallas Cowboys. And I turned to my mom. I said, Mom, what time on Sunday did you go in the labor with me? She goes, around 4:30. I said, oh, about 30 minutes after the Eagles lost to the Cowboys. She goes, well, yeah, I guess so. I said, yeah, I was pissed. I'm coming out. I smacked the doctor. I came out perfect one. I haven't shut up since.
Awesome. Well, actually, it's kind of interesting because, you know, the wedding I'm going to this Saturday, I'm going to be best man for a kid I went to high school with. And, a lucky number of 13 because of, I think it was because of John Valentin. It was always his favorite shortstop for the Red Sox. But he played second base, too. And he's never really much of a great player, but Valentin actually holds a very interesting distinction of being one of the last guys to ever score a unassisted triple play on defense. Caught the ball, touched the runner, and touched the base. Hard to do baseball. But anyway, this is our 82nd morning.
And with unassisted triple plays, you know the Phillies had two of them in their history.
But
you didn't know that.
I did.
And both of them were during my lifetime. I saw them both live.
Cool. All right, well, that's
not happy day.
We're going to cut it short. Take off till next Thursday, the 20th. Not this Thursday. We have no show. 13th, it would be unlucky to have a show. No. That's it. We're signing off. We'll be back on the 20th. We'll have a guest.
All right. We'll see you later.
Okay, guys.
I think we got Bobby.
Right. Yeah. As always, enjoy the fight.
Right.
All right.
But the Marlins fight back. It's now a one-run game. Philadelphia leads. New to YouTube, it's probably posted back in July. do you see a some sort of hand in of organization?
Well, I do think, look, this group is, as our colleague reported, this is an extremist group in Libya. There have been increasing concerns about Al-Qaeda presence in the east of Libya, just near a city called Derna. Derna is to the east of Benghazi. And I think, look, the American officials will be looking to see. We've not heard any confirmation that these are in any way related. It's just that the two very significant events in the same day, it'd be natural that you will be looking now, American officials will have to be looking to see whether or not they can find a connection between these two events.
And Fred, you pointed out that an American was killed. We have available to confirm it was an American. It was just somebody at the U.S. consulate, an official at the consulate. We're trying to find out more, obviously, on the identity of this person. Ian, you watched the video that they're protesting. Do we know who posted it, who made it, where it comes from? Oh, what we're hearing, Anderson, is that there were a couple Coptic Christians who come from Egypt, including Christian, a minority sect here in Egypt, that were involved in the making of it. And this is why there's outrage towards the United States government, because protesters are blaming the U.S. for allowing this video to come out, and they're saying the U.S. is accountable and responsible for the fact that they allowed a video like this to go out there and to be spread out there. So that's why these protesters are definitely angry and directing their anger towards the United States.
Mona, being here in Cairo, why do you think this is happening now?
Well, that's a great question, Amethyst, because, you know, we're in a stage right now in Egypt where the revolution that began last year for freedoms of all kinds is still very much not completed. And a big concern for many people in Egypt today is that these terrible events will be used by the government to justify a return to emergency law. We still don't have a constitution in Egypt. We don't have a parliament in Egypt. Our president and prime minister have been missing in action all day. They have made no official statements. And so you basically have a fringe element that claims to represent us, and it doesn't, on a day and at a time when Egyptians are still very much trying to decide which way our direction, which way our revolution is going. Freedom of expression must be a right, as is freedom to protest. But the question here is, why was today chosen, and why was the protest taking place at the U.S. Embassy, and who called for this protest? As you mentioned, or as we heard earlier, this film has been on YouTube for several weeks now. So this, you know, we have to take back to the time of the Danish cartoon, which were published in October of 2005, but the protests against them didn't start until January of 2006. And much of that, many of those protests were what I call manufactured outrage that was used for political gain by both regimes and Islamic groups. And what we don't want to happen in Egypt now is for us to be stuck by an extreme right-wing element, which are the Salafis, and a president and his government, which I consider right-wing, composed of, well, the president is from the Muslim Brotherhood movement, and we don't want to be stuck between these two, because our revolution was for social justice and for liberty, not to go up to the American embassy and bring down the flag.
And Fran, just from a security standpoint, have the Egyptian government forces, have the military forces wanted to stop protesters from scaling over the walls? I mean, they could have done that just as they could have stopped people from attacking each other in Tahrir Square had they not just stood by and watched.
Absolutely, Anderson. Look, this is not, to Mona's point, the protest today was not a surprise. We've heard from sources and so if Egyptian officials and the military security officials were on notice about this, we've got to ask ourselves, why weren't they there before the protest began? Pre-positioned to ensure that they could keep protesters a safe distance from the embassy and protect the embassy. But this is not the first time Egyptian security officials have failed to do that. You know, it wasn't that long ago when the wall of the Israeli embassy in Cairo was also breached. And so, look, there are real questions about Egyptian officials' commitment to protecting diplomatic establishments in Cairo.
I will continue to follow the details on the ground. Monday, El Tahawi, appreciate your man as well. Thanks very much. Let us know what you think. We're on Facebook, following on Twitter right now at Anderson Cooper. Up next, a reporter who said he had seen evidence the warnings in the 9/11 attack were downplayed, in part because some of the Bush administration believed al-Qaeda was bluffing, the real threat was Saddam Hussein. Now, as you might imagine, those claims, that argument is causing an uproar of the author who's made that argument for the Kurt Magnewald. He joins us, so this is our reflection. We are back.
But sometimes your future can be a bit hard to see. That's why the principal created the Dreamcatcher, a new online tool to help imagine the life you want someday in pictures. You can organize, prioritize, and plan. Then, with more than 130 years' experience, we can manage your investments to help make your dream reality. Visit dreamagain.com or ask your advisor. It's time to dream again with the principal. A residence inn. You have room to think, room to eat, and room to dream. Because its motto room is a residence. Residence inn.
What's that? You gotta go.
Everybody got a gun.
Keep your stage in trouble for decades. You expect me to start a war in New York where things actually matter?
But I'm still stuck up.
Truth is, NyQuil does not stop your nose.
What?
Alka-Seltzer Plus Liquid Gel speeds relief to your worst cold symptoms, plus has decongestant for your stuffy nose.
Thanks. That's the cold truth.
An initial surge of liquid evacuation severe flooding is expected.